This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Jikoji, and good morning, friends online. Really wonderful to be with you, even at a distance. It's wonderful. I'd like to always start our gatherings on Sunday by acknowledging the original stewards of this land upon which the Koji sits, the Ohlone people. They are still among us. Their descendants are still here. They've been part of this land for over 10,000 years, not just our land, the entire Bay Area, which should indicate to all of us what recent immigrants, all of us are, 10,000 year history of taking care. And this is their unceded territory on which Jikoji sits. So we bow in recognition of that and thank them for their presence and their culture and their care. I hope that this acknowledgement is not just more words, but actually an opportunity for us to recognize the importance of recognizing each other and our various cultures, and what we bring to each moment together, to live with greater awareness of all beings and our precious and often unrecognized interconnection and all the invisible connections that sustain us all. In the last few gatherings here, my last few times giving a talk, we were contemplating the Buddha's second teaching, which was the three marks of existence. Those are impermanence and suffering, not self. And in considering last week this idea about not self, by the way, not non-self, not a negation of self, not a permanent, stable self, I invoked the metaphor of zazen, this practice that we have of sitting down and letting the body and mind settle and watching what happens. I invoked a metaphor of a mirror, that zazen is a mirror. You're facing a wall, that's a mirror. You're facing yourself anywhere, that's a mirror. In the mirror of zazen, in the mirror of your life, you see a variety of phenomena arising and going, including whoever this is in a given moment, whoever this is in every given moment. And you notice that everything is impermanent in the mirror because it's moving, it's changing. You know this naturally. You are not the same person now that you were maybe even just a few hours ago, but it's usually easier to see, like, 10 years ago. You're not that person anymore. The person's still here. This is not the same embodiment. So this week, I'd like to take that metaphor of zazen as a mirror into the garden. Back to that. We're going into the garden with the zazen mirror. And I came upon a poem in this last week. It's from, I found this poem in a movie that I recommend called Zen for Nothing. It's on Amazon. It's really lovely. And this poem was in that movie. So I'd like to share it with you. I want you to know that this is a translation that I kind of pieced together from, it was written in the French, by the way. So Kevin could read it in French for us. But I pieced this version together from a few different translations. So in my talk, I might mention words that are not in this translation because there's lots of ways to translate. And this poem was written in 1946 by Jacques Prévert, and it's called How to Paint Portrait of a Bird. And I find it really an incredible opportunity, a real path it lays forth that is very consistent with our practice of how to live our lives, knowing that there's nothing in that mirror that's stable, in the mirror of Zazen, in the mirror of our shared existence. How do we live? In this poem, its quiet way, it offers us a poem. I'm going to see if I can share it. Okay. See it, friends? Yeah. So what I'd like to do, you can all see it too, right? What I'd like to do is have you and me and us aloud. It's not very many lines, actually. So I'll start with the first line, and then I'm going to go to you. You can't see it. Okay, so I'm gonna... Really? Okay, I'll read it to you. Don't pretend like it's reading time. Just sit down, relax, cuddle up. How to paint a bird's portrait. Or to paint a bird's portrait. First, paint a cage with an open door. Next, paint something pretty, something simple, something lovely, something of use to the bird. Then put that canvas near a tree, in a garden, or a forest. Hide. Say nothing. Don't move. Sometimes the bird comes quickly, but it can just as well take many years before deciding. Don't be disheartened. Wait. Wait years if need be. The pace of the bird's arrival bearing no relation to the success of the painting. When the bird comes, if it comes, keep very still. Wait for the bird to enter the cage. Once it has, gently shut the door with the brush. Then paint out the bars. One by one, taking care not to touch any of the bird's feathers. Next, paint the tree's portrait, choosing the loveliest of its branches for the bird. Paint likewise the green leaves and the freshness of the wind, the dust, the sun, and the noise of the creatures of the grass in the heat of summer. And then wait until the bird decides to sing. If the bird does not sing, that's a bad sign. The sign painting is no good. But if it sings, that's a good sign. A sign you can sign. In that case, very gently pluck one of the bird's quills and write your name in a corner. Thank you. So the poem begins. First, paint a cage with an open door. Let's say that open-doored cage is our sitting with an open heart. As we take this upright posture in Zazen, we create a structure. Got to sit up a little bit more upright. We create this structure, this container. The door to our container must be open, wide open. It has to be one of radical openness, like everything that can come may come without my objection. And then maybe you can invite bird, allow anything without demanding anything particular show up. So when we sit Zazen, we create space for awareness. But we can't grab the visitors that appear in our awareness. There's no grabbing. Think of a mirror. The mirror doesn't hold on to bird flying by, us appearing, not even the shadow of us. Not grabbing. This non-grabbing is actually kind of mirrored in a story from the Pali Canon, from the Buddha's direct teachings. And this is a story about Aya. You guys know about Aya. Aya was what they call a bark-clad ascetic. Bark. So he was hardcore. He owned absolutely nothing. He was clothing himself in the bark of trees. He was a bark-clad ascetic. He was so hungry for the truth that he rushed into the road while the Buddha was out, with alms on a begging round. And he rushed up to the Buddha and asked the Buddha for a teaching. And the Buddha offered this. In the seen, let there be only the seen. In the heard, only heard. Bahia is said to have reached enlightenment right then with this teaching. So as we sit, we notice in our awareness everything that is appearing in this mirror of Zazen. We see the seeing only, hearing only, without a narrative, without any extra added to it. In the seeing, let there be only the seen. In the heard, only the heard. We don't try to keep and hold on to any reflection in the mirror of Zazen. It's like we stop interfering with what's here, or demanding that anything be here, or pushing something away that we don't want to. We just stop interfering. And in that, there is just the seeing, just the hearing, without an overlay, without an opinion or an assessment. That's our Zazen. Then the poem says, paint something simple, pretty, simple, beautiful, useful for the bird. As we sit, we may notice this pretty, simple, beautiful, useful thing called our breath. That's good. Breath, another breath. We're alive. Maybe, though they're pretty quiet today, you notice the turkeys, the scrub jays, your neighbors breathing, shifting around. Just by sitting still, you may notice our responsibility to be here for the bird. To be fully in this moment, stripped of any pretense, and command, be recognized, be seen, but rather just be present. Next, the poem says, place that canvas near a tree, and we're instructed to hide behind the tree without speaking, without moving. Sound familiar? Zazen, not moving, when we stop having to be a somebody, even just for a few minutes, sitting zazen, and we make ourselves disappear in the home, in this tree, behind the tree, we start to see ourselves in context of everything. It's not the bird sticking out front, it's not us sticking out front, the great merging of everything together. When we don't have to be the center of everything, we enjoy the context of being part of everything. And it's really enough. It feels good to not stick out and need to be somebody. When we sit zazen, we're not improving ourselves. It's not a self-improvement project. We're not actually trying to gain anything except in this moment, be in it, be in your life the way it actually is. It's not very complicated, but as you may have noticed, it's not very easy to be fully present in your own life with the whole phenomenal world arising. Then the poem tells us to wait and says, sometimes the bird comes quickly, but it can just as well take many years. This is painfully true. It can take a long time before we notice the quality of the vast coexistence. And the poem encourages to simply wait without demanding that the bird appear. Eihe Dogen is very famous in Soto Zen. He's considered the founder of Soto Zen, 12th century monk, poet, priest, teacher, writer. He has a kind of a collection of writings called the Shobogenzo, and the very first classical is called Vendawa. Vendawa means on the endeavor of the way. And there's a very, very famous section in this classical where he says practice and realization are not two different. Practice and realization are not two. In Japanese, this concept is called shusho ito, or the oneness of practice and realization. And I think this might be Dogen's signature contribution to Zen, that it's not a separate thing to practice and have insight. Practice and realization, it's sitting itself is the enactment of realization or enlightenment, some people say. So in our poem, the bird is not a reward. It doesn't arrive at the end of the story. Not a reward for hiding behind a tree or being good. The careful preparation of the painting of the cage, the open, making sure the door is open, the eraser of the bars, all of this, not imposing a self upon the scene, all of this, that is practice realization. In other words, sitting, our sitting, is not the end, not the reward, like the bird is not coming at the end. The sitting isn't a means to the end. It is. And then the poem shifts and says, wait for the bird to enter the cage. Once it has, gently shut. When I read that line, it just, no, felt like a betrayal. And no, don't cage the bird. But the poet must know that we're going to respond that way, because right away, immediately, he writes, paint out the bars one by one. Paint out the bars one by one. I know I breathe a sigh of relief, and I want the bird in the cage. The cage, this container where we place ourselves to be fully awake in our own lives, it's not a cage. It's not meant to imprison. It's a temporary support form. There's a Mahayana text called the Diamond Sutra that also has a teaching that has to do with, you know, exactly what this is. This teaching is called the Mirror of No Abiding. And again, there's a very famous line from this sutra. In fact, this line, I'm going to give you two translations. This line was supposedly something that our sixth ancestor in Zen, Wei Ning, in our lineage, he's the sixth ancestor. So early on, apparently an illiterate Wei Ning was in the marketplace and he heard this. He heard someone reciting this line from the Diamond Sutra and he was awakened. And then he became on the path, eventually our sixth ancestor. And this is what that teaching is. Develop a mind that does not abide in anything. Or sometimes awaken the mind without fixing it. That's what Wei Ning heard. It woke him up to his own life, our shared life. So developing a mind which does not fix or grab or hold on tells us not to cling. Not to try to hold on to the cage. And, you know, it's easy to look at. You could do it in terms of identity. I'm a Zen practitioner. I'm a monk. Or I'm a brown robe. I'm a teacher. Or I'm fill in the blank. Whatever you think of as your identity. That's clinging. Okay. We've built a cage out of an identity. Now we're trapped. We all have to be courageous, kind of almost brutally courageous and honest to erase bars, set ourselves, leave the door open. Again, a mirror does not abide in the reflection. This mirror of Zazen, any mirror, you're all mirroring, you're all mirrors. We don't grab it and say, you have to stay the way you were. I need you to stay the way you were. Likewise, you got to stay where I put you yesterday. And that was a good day. Doesn't work that way. If it worked that way, you would be dead. Practice would be dead. We are not yet dead. And then the poet tells us, do not touch any of the bird's feathers. And then we're told, paint the tree's portrait, the green leaves and the fresh breeze, the sun's scintillation, or the dust of the sun. So finally, we're told to zoom out. Oh, the bird's not the focus anymore. Whole field of awareness is right in front of us. It's not just me in that mirror. It's not just me and you in that mirror. Whole field. Awareness here. Bird is no longer the center of the focus. Everything is one field. We see the bird and the painter in context. Context is relationship. None of this exists right now, right here, outside of relationship. You know this. You wouldn't be breathing but for the tree. Everything is in relationship. It's endless co-arising. I think the poet is telling us it's actually not bird over there and us over here. We're going to make it very current. It's not Trump over there and us over here. Even the things we find difficult. Part of feel, not so. Everything is one continuous blooming field. All of you blooming. We are that. It is us. Now the poet tells us the bird may not sing. And if the bird doesn't sing, it's a bad sign. And that's true. We know that feeling, right? In our own bodies, we know that feeling when things are not in harmony. This does not feel right. Something's out of whack. Not really right. Bird's not singing. We are not in harmony with all co-arising. Whenever we impose an I that demands that life deliver the what we want it to deliver, we are not going to be in harmony. And things feel out of whack, and the bird won't sing. Notice the poet doesn't tell us to make the bird sing. You cannot make the bird sing. The Buddha used kind of similar metric in teaching his son, Rahula. There's a teaching where the Buddha says he wants Rahula to use his mind like a mirror to inspect his heart. So before Rahula, his son, could do anything with his body, speech, or mind, including how he would speak to himself, he had to inspect it to make sure it would not harm himself or anyone else. Only then, when he knew that the action through body, speech, and mind was beneficial, could he go forward. And sing, right? The singing is simply a reflection of harmony, of your non-interference, not of any particular great gift or knowledge or skill, but if you're willing to be completely present with what's happening, tell yourself. Not as someone entirely separate from the context, someone who is experienced and experienced and experienced by the whole field. This is this willingness to meet what's here, no matter what's here, honestly. Poem then says, if it sings, that's a good sign. And in that case, very gently pluck one of the bird's quills and write your name in the corner. If it sings, that is a sign of alignment, that you're in the whole mesh of existence. It's a sign of your non-interference, of harmony, of understanding. The song, its presence, the fact that the bird is singing, is kind of proof of your non-interference. Your signature is proof of your non-interference. It's acknowledging you're here too. It's part of this, not separate. The song itself, it's actually just life. Nothing special. Yet it is exquisite. And I don't know about you, but I live for that life. It is alive just now, like this. Right now. This. So, this poem is teaching us how to live. When we really understand that there's nothing permanent in that mirror, there's nothing permanent in the world, everything is moving, including lives. How do we live that full awareness, never trying to avoid it, to get rid of it, fully immersed in this deep truth and transient? The poem shows us to live in the mirror. We show up, we sit quiet. We don't move. We don't insert ourselves, create an I that needs to be recognized. We hide behind the screen. And we wait. We sit in the middle of our messy, complicated, confused, beautiful lives, just as they are, not demanding that they be different, not saying, sing already, life, sing for me. Just the way it is. We paint away the bars because we no longer need to be seen something separate from this. Meeting it. It's the light. As we develop the capacity to practice with our lives the way they are, not demanding that it be different, what happens is we get kind of wide-eyed like a child. Everything's new. We look at every, even the repetitive things, we look at it like, oh, what's happening now? What is that? Without pushing it away. And without grabbing it and saying, oh, I've been here before. You have not been here before, ever. And we're not sitting there waiting for something to happen, not just in Zazen and or in our lives. We're just waiting to notice that we are fully and completely and can only be here in this moment and then the next moment. This intimate being with we're doing right now. We can't stop doing ever, but we look away. We get busy. Our minds take us elsewhere. But when we're completely open to being with, completely with, means carefully caring, be with. Sometimes a bird sings. Sometimes we have a deep insight or awareness of the little preciousness. This shared life, it's incredible that we get to be here today, right now. It's unbelievable, really. I mentioned in beginning meditation, there was a monk here one time who actually did the math for like 10 people in the room. 20,000 people had to live their lives exactly the way they led their lives for those 10 people to end up in the room at the same time. That's how miraculous it is. We are here. We're even alive. This awareness of the preciousness of our life and the impermanence of it, quickly it goes by. That insight, that precious understanding, does not come from a book. It does not come from knowledge. It does not come from any kind of strategy or calculation or proving that you are anybody. It comes from quiet. It doesn't even come from this. It comes from this whole thing. It's the simple face-to-face meeting with yourself. And that mirror is everything. So I hope you will continue to paint the cage with an open door and erase the bars, that you will make a life that includes the whole field, paint the whole field, everything you see, and that then you will trust the living expression, your part, mind. You will trust the living expression of your awareness. Trust your part, big. And may you enjoy song. Thank you for listening. Your turn. You can. The poem completely different. And I'll start with my friends online. I don't like it because you get forgotten. Anyone? Jack.
What if the bird does not sing? Perhaps there's something that you need to fix. Perhaps there's something you need to change in your life. Perhaps, you know, it sounds like what you were saying sounds like you accept everything, right? But we don't have to accept everything.
Are you suggesting that accepting everything means doing nothing?
Right. So perhaps you have to explain accept everything so that I can understand that if you're in a bad place, you can get out of it. That
right.
kind of thing.
Thank you. That's a really very, very important observation. I don't want anyone to be confused that we're supposed to do nothing with our understanding and awareness. When I said we have to be brutally courageous and honest about what's in the mirror, that's the clarion call. Pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention. What has to happen with what you understand from that mirror is contextual still, right? It's not like there's this little thread you pull out and it's And yet, it means that you have to do something wholesome, even in the face of difficulty. So, yes, go march. And the relationship. Tell the truth about what's just happened to you. In the time and tell the truth. You're not here to accept. It's not that kind of acceptance. That would not be wholesome. It's waiting for the truth to emerge about what and how you are to respond. It's the song. Sing. What to sing. How to respond. So just like Rahula and the Buddha telling his son, don't do anything with what you observe in the phenomenal reality of this wall and of your life until you know that it is from a wholesome place. And we all know this in our own lives. You know, you can end a relationship, love, really, truly. Not necessarily the other person will receive it that way. But you can do it from a place of wholesomeness, right? All sorts of things can change for the good because you're bringing to it deep understanding of interconnection. Yes?
Yeah. It doesn't arise from any particular situation that I happen to be in. I just want to clarify that. It was just a general clarification. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And I really appreciate this because sometimes I think people misunderstand acceptance. I don't even like to use that word very often because I think it's so fraught. They think they're supposed to take whatever comes. No, of course not.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like, throwing yourself in front of a bus. No, there is you and there is a bus, there's reality. And you have to decide how to respond wholesomely. Wholesomely means not just knowing that it's not going to cause harm to you or to someone else, but from a place of calm abiding, from a place of understanding interrelationship. I can't hear you. There you go.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Good. You know I'm a painter, an artist, and so I related to that poem very much. A landscape painter, we go out and paint plein air painting, and my students, when I take them out, there's one thing I often tell them about painting. A little explanation here. There is the um, the surface of the painting is a plane that we call it the picture plane. Okay, and oftentimes we're drawing a little picture within the side of a frame. But what I say when we're out there painting in landscape, we have this enormous landscape. Usually, I always pick out great locations. And the neighborhoods that I live in is very much beautiful. And so I say the picture plane doesn't start out here, but your picture plane starts back here. So you put yourself into your painting in a way. You put yourself into the landscape. You feel and picture the whole thing. I call it, and it's from a Zen term, panoramic awareness, and the whole awareness of the whole thing. And you put yourself into the painting, into the situation, into the landscape. And so in that way, the bird is yourself in the painting, and the cage, the bird, the whole thing. It's all together. So that's what I was thinking about when you read the poem. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Felt paintbrush moving over me in the canvas as you spoke. Thank you so much. Okay, anyone else online? Okay, anyone here? Is that a bow? Do you want to speak? Yes. I'm having trouble with the metaphor. Yeah, let's make it not, let's make the you, the painter, sitting, feel. Mentioning that this container is canvas. Maybe the wall could be the canvas too. That you're not actually inserting or making or producing. It's a metaphor for existence. And it's you're waiting for a bird. The cage has to be open. Bird is noticing everything's Buddha nature. You don't actually have to do anything. Sit, wait to be fully in your life. And you don't even have to sit. You can drive down the road. You can eat a meal. You can be completely in your life, sneezing, brushing your teeth. Completely in your life. I mean, we're doing a thing called 52 weeks. If you want to join us, you can. It's on our website. And it's a mindful exercise every week. And the first week was something like do something that you routinely do with your dominant hand, do it with your non-dominant hand. And so I brushed my teeth for a week with my dominant hand. This is a mindfulness exercise. It was really hilarious. Like, I didn't understand how the toothbrush worked. I have an electric toothbrush, and I was like, oh, getting my cheek. I was doing everything like I was inept. And I mean, by the end of the week, I got pretty good at navigating this thing. And it was just so foreign to me because I have a habit energy that knows how to do this in my sleep, right? But when I do it this way, it's all new. It's all new. Like, I had to think about every single part of it. How do I do this now? It's so different. So that's what we're talking about. At any point in your existence, stop, be still, and be present in your life. It's the same as painting a cage and with the door open and moving away the bars and watching what's here. What's here right now? What's actually happening? A baby, a young child with those big eyes going, what is this world? And we don't have to make anything up. It's all already here. You can't even make it. Good question. Well, I don't know about you, but I spend a lot of time ruminating about what I have to get done. I wish maybe I'd handled something a little differently, or I wish someone else had handled something a lot differently. That's not really being in this moment. It's already happened. This hasn't happened. And where I am is right. Now, that's not to reject the lessons that could be learned from maybe thinking, I didn't handle that well, or I need to go talk to this person about how this landed. It doesn't mean that we're supposed to reject that. I would not say that. That would be like trying to pretend like a portion of the field doesn't exist. The field exists. The whole thing exists. But to be present with it, with this kind of affection or caretaking, kind of a grandmother, if you had a nice grandmother, or a grandfather, or if you had a nice grandfather, that kind of loving attention to the things that come up that are difficult, both there, you can take care of these things in the present moment. An easy example is that people get very identified in a harmful way with their history. All of us have trauma. I have yet to meet somebody. I've met a lot of people who said they have no trauma, and I get to know them, and they just tell me traumatic story after traumatic story. And I think, interesting. They don't want to call it trauma, but boy, that's heavy. And nobody gets out of this alive without some difficulties. And it's not because somebody, you know, is beating them necessarily. It's because part of being alive is that your needs are not always fully met. It's just, you know, you can't really, it's not a perfect equation. Anyone who's a parent already knows this really well. You put your whole self in and you do your best. And my kids turned out great, thank God. Phew. But it only had a little bit to do with me and their dad. There's a lot of other forces. So the point is that you can meet what's here in full recognition of what's come before without identifying it, right? I am not a victim of all that stuff. Yeah, that happened. And I'm not denying that happened. And it had an imprint, right? It made a difference to me. What do I want to do with that information about this person? Well, I want to really understand it. Really find when I have deep compassion for this. Guess who else I have compassion for? Everyone that I thought was a that. That's being in your life. It gets so that there isn't a me that's separate from the whole thing. And it's delightful to live there. It feels like you're so fully alive, even when it's uncomfortable. It's like rich. You understand? Thank you. It's a really good question. That's my take on it. Yes. course. Boy, I sure hope it's possible, else we're really doomed, right? If we're not responsible for being able to listen and really try to understand what someone else's experience is, we are in the cage. We're in the cage. We're also sticking them in the cage, right? But we're really suffering. We cannot hear that someone feels so disenfranchised, so not part of the whole fabric, they're going to try to do something violent. Doesn't matter, violence, that's not the bird singing. And my experience, my own lived experience, the reason I'm here, because, you know, I had a life before this, and I could be in that life like that. But the reason I'm here is because I've experienced what it is to understand that there isn't this separate from Trump. There isn't. I don't like a lot of what a lot of people do in the world. I don't like their focusing on separation when it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. But what can I do? I can do this. This is my offering of this non-I, that I can say, hey, in my life, I cannot say that you are not me and that I am not you. I will live my life that way because it's true for me. It's just absolute truth that there is just interconnection. You know, when I was a little girl, the first people walked on the moon. I was maybe 5 years old, and I watched it on our little black and white TV. It was a life-changing moment for me. I've never forgotten it. My dad and I have four brothers, but my dad and I were the only ones there, probably because it was before school age for me. And I got to stay home from wherever I was supposed to be to watch this. And I said to my dad, there's these pictures of the Earth. And I said, well, where are the country lines? Because I had a globe. And my dad said, there aren't actually country lines. And I said, what? Because I knew that there were people at war over country lines. And I, to this day, cannot get my head around it because of the picture of the Earth in space. How could we be so small when there's that truth hanging in us? So I don't think that anything works except for allowing whole mess, doing our little tiny bit, our open hand to the next person, whether or not we agree with them, still kind of loving them because they are us. It's not a separation. And it's pretty hard. That's not an easy task. And, you know, boil it down to something very immediate and local. You know, you're in your workplace and your boss is at you. You know, when you really understand, that person is now doing this at you, and you will have the first response. Instead of defending yourself and protecting yourself, you will look and say, "He's really suffering." That's what how you will respond, because you know that how that feels. You are that person. You have felt that. That's Trump. That's Netanyahu. That's all Elon Musk, whose car I'm driving embarrassingly. It's us. It's us. So we're responsible for them. We made them, and we better take care of them. I think it's time. Do you have any more questions or comments or complaints? We'll be up in the community room.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge. and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jikoji, please visit us on the web at jikoji.org.